all the unique characters.
I do let them bang. Yeah, I'm a legend, man. I'm building my legs.
All the stories and perspectives featured weekly.
I wasn't fully committed to that choke, and I kind of sunk into it, started squeezing tighter, and I kind of heard him gurgle a little bit. I was like, oh.
And all the combat sports you could ask for in the best state in the U.S.
Like I said, Ohio versus the world. It's going to happen for sure. Watch out.
It'll be cool, man. I'm not worried about it. I'm going to show them why the Ohio MMA scene is, in my opinion, one of the best MMA scenes in the country.
This is Forged in
OHIO.
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 Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 73 of Forged in Ohio. My name is Jake Murrin, and I'm the host of the podcast. There's a lot of fighters that stand out when you look at Cage Thunder 26. Lots of knockouts and exciting performances, but perhaps none more exciting than the fighter joining me today, and I think the word exciting is the best way to describe this Apex Fight Systems product. It's Undead Jeremy Riley. Thanks for coming on the show, Jeremy, and welcome to Forged in Ohio.
Hey, what's up? Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, of course, and representing Apex very well on this. We'll talk about that here very shortly. But there's no better way to start this than your performance at Cage Thunder 26. The card was stacked, but your super heavyweight fight against James Dennis was perhaps the fight people were looking forward to the most. Did you sense that as well, that there were a lot of eyes on you, a lot of eyes on this big fight?
The second they posted that, they had hella shares, hella likes, and I saw everyone saying this is the people's main event. That's how I felt.
Yeah, and they actually made the announcement at Cage Thunder Next Gen Fight Series 1, I believe. You were in attendance. They made that big announcement. What was that like, too, being there? And I'm sure a lot of people coming up to you and saying they can't wait for the fight.
I actually had a kid. I think his name was Christopher Black. He came up to me and actually took a picture with me. So it was kind of cool, but I'm also not great with, like, social interactions or even interviews. Like, I get nervous even before a cage. It was kind of, I wouldn't say bittersweet, because it wasn't bitter, but it was just kind of nerve-wracking, kind of weird. But it was actually nice. I wasn't actually in the crowd when they announced the fight, because I was with the back of my team getting ready for my teammates to fight. But that was actually the same day they brought me and Matt Beal up for the Fight of the Year announcement as well.
So does that put pressure on you to go out there and put on a show, or do you do a good job of dealing with, you know, that type of stress and anxiety that comes with a fight game?
I always have stress and anxiety, man. Every fight, I'm scared, I'm nervous, I'm excited. So it doesn't really affect anything. As far as putting on a show, that's just my fight style, man. I'm like, as weird as it may sound, my teammates refer to me as like a Sean Strickland, because like my superpower is child abuse, man. Like, I'm not scared to get hit. I'm used to it. So I'll walk into a punch to land my own punch.
Superpower of child abuse. I've never heard that one before. So everyone on social media has called it the cleanest right hand they've ever seen. And that's easy to say watching the clip, but you were the one that was in there and landed it. Just how clean was that right hand?
In that moment, I was more like, holy fuck, my leg's dead. I need to end this fight now. So I wasn't thinking about how clean or how nice it looked. I was just like, thank God it's over, because he was killing my leg with the leg kicks.
Oh, wow, so just a minute and a half into the first round, your leg was already feeling it, and you knew you had to get that fight over with sooner rather than later.
Yeah, after the second kick, I think I stand switched for a second. He kicked my new front lead leg, and I was like, fuck it, I just got to sacrifice one leg, not both. Switched back, kicked it two more times, and then I was like, I was almost done. And that's why I landed in an uppercut with a right that actually knocked his mouthpiece out. And then the ref did his little, I'm going to stop it. I'm not going to stop it. Go, don't go, whatever the hell he was doing. But then after they got the mouthpiece in, I immediately had to keep following up, finished in like 20 seconds after he put the mouthpiece back in, because my leg was about to be toast.
So realistically, how long do you think you could have gone with how your leg was if you didn't land that shot that ended the fight in the first round?
If he kept kicking it, probably two more kicks. But he also kind of let up. Like, when he landed his last kick, I started throwing my own kicks. And then that kind of stops him from throwing kicks. So it just depends on what he would have done. If he landed two more clean hard kicks like he did, I think I would, as much as I hate to admit it, I was flashbacking during that fight. Like, not flashbacking, but thinking of the disappointment I would have led with my teammate just quitting essentially from leg kick. So
Man, so after the fight, did it take a while for the legs to recover, or was it something that you mainly felt in the moment?
No, actually, I didn't start feeling, like, it didn't go away until, like, yesterday, honestly. Like, I've been feeling it up until yesterday. Yesterday was the first day where I woke up, and it was just gone. I've been taking Epsom salt baths, well, Epsom salt with hot water, just bathing every day for, like, the last 2 weeks, and it finally disappeared yesterday.
I know you have had a history of injuries, and we'll talk about that shortly, but leg kicks and an injured leg like that, is that one of the worst things that you can have to go through after a fight?
Other than like a major serious bone, as far as like minor injuries like bruising, yeah, I think the leg kicks are the worst because your whole body's supported on your legs. Like, if you want to go to work the next day, you're walking. If you want to go on a date, you're walking. Everything relies on your legs.
Yeah, for sure. So going into this one, did you know that right hand would be there for you to land? Studying this fight, James Dennis and his style, did you know that chance would be there for you to land that devastating blow?
Yeah, I even watched all of his fights. I have a screenshot with some collages of like freeze framed moments of every time he throws a kick, his eyes are either closed or his hands are down or both. So I was like, I'm going to eat these kicks. I'm going to land an overhand right. So that was the game plan. It just almost backfired.
There's no doubt that power is important in MMA, especially when you're fighting at heavyweight or even super heavyweight. But I feel like precision can often be overlooked. How important is it for you to be precise when you land that right hand? That way it does end the fight like it did. That way you secure the knockout.
Pretty important. But I feel like I lack power. I don't think I am that strong. I might be big, but compared to other heavyweights, my frame's more of a 205. I probably should be 205. So it's more so my speed. I'm really athletic, agile, and fairly precise with my strikes. I don't think it was power that knocked him out. It was just speed, him not seeing it coming, and it landing clean in the button.
Is that something that differentiates you from other fighters in your weight class at heavyweight? You've clearly demonstrated that you have the power, even though you don't consider yourself a super powerful puncher, but that precision is lethal too.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest attribute. Other than not being afraid to take a punch, it's also my speed. Like, everyone I fought, I've been faster than, and that's what helps me. I can get, they throw a jab, I can counter it because I see it coming, I'm fast enough to counter it. So I think my speed is the biggest attribute. I just need to add cardio to it, and I might be unstoppable. But I don't know.
Is cardio the one missing ingredient in your game?
Yes. I've been working on it. I've been going to the gym outside of the usual gym. I've been going to like Planet Fitness, trying to run the treadmill before each lift, after each lift, for at least 30 minutes, trying to up the cardio. It's hard when I work 6 days a week, 50-plus hours. It's just now I'm trying to go pro, essentially. I wasn't sure if I wanted to go pro before because I was 0-2, 1-3. I didn't have a good record. Now I've had two good knockouts in a row. I got title fights lined up. I actually have a shot to go pro. So now that I see the light at the end of the tunnel, it's kind of pushing me more. So I have been working on my cardio, and it's getting better every day.
Something else that I think differentiates you from other heavyweights is your durability, especially on the amateur scene. Most notably, your fight against Matt Beal at Cage Thunder 22. Do you think you're one of the most durable fighters in the state of Ohio?
I think so. Like, I might bruise easy. The bruises might last long. But I only have one fight where it looked like I was knocked out. And it was actually Devin Blythewood hit me with an overhand right, and it actually broke my leg because it was already fractured. So when he landed it, people thought I got knocked out, but I wasn't out. It just, my leg buckled from underneath me and I fell. So yeah, I pride myself on my durability and my chin and honestly my heart, because I don't care if I'm in pain, I'll push through.
Yeah, you definitely have one of the best chins in Ohio amateur MMA. Considering that you are a heavyweight fighter, how much of an advantage is being super durable? And does that give you a chip on your shoulder heading into fights, knowing that you can likely take their best shots?
Yeah, I almost that was kind of the plan with James Dennis, was my fact that I can, I don't want to make it sound like he's, I don't want to downgrade him, but I want to say I was tougher, like out tough him. Eat the shots that he was throwing to land my own, because I knew my chin, my body, my heart can outlast his. So yeah, it's a, as much as I shouldn't rely on it, probably it is a big key factor that I rely on going into a fight. Like, if I'm scared, if I'm nervous, every time I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I can take it. I know I can take it. Even if he's better than me, eventually they're going to get tired. They're going to get broken. I'm not.
The fight ended a minute and 31 seconds into the first round. Funny enough, I had asked Cage Thunder's promoter, Randy Jarvis, ahead of the fight if he was taking the over under half a round. He took the over while I took the under. It was, of course, over by just 1 second. But did you imagine, like so many others did, that this fight was not going to make it past one round?
Yep. If you go back and watch my Cage Thunder interview, I said it's going to be a first round TKO. One of us was going out. We're heavyweights, man. No one, even if you have a cardio, no one wants to go 2-3 rounds as a heavyweight. So I knew it was going to be over in the first round. And if you watch the fight, that was probably the most aggressive James Dennis has been. Like, that's probably the best he's looked and the most aggressive he's looked. And we're both just nonstop pushing forward. And I just happened to land first.
Does that make you even more proud of the performance, knowing that it might have been the best version of James Dennis we've seen, and that was still the result, you with your hand raised?
Yes, it helped. Like, watching him fight RJ, he didn't even get to land a punch. It almost seemed like he was maybe gun shy. Coming into this fight, he wasn't scared. He was throwing bombs, and I knocked him out worse than RJ did, arguably. So, in my mind, I want to say I'm maybe stronger than, hit harder than RJ. I mean, probably not true, but in my mind, I'm thinking that.
So I'll never know what it's like to be in the cage, let alone land such a devastating blow. When you land that knockout punch and the crowd goes crazy, can you even put into words what that feels like?
No, it was like hitting paper, man. It was like, that's how it felt. I didn't feel anything. And I always thought it was bullshit when coaches say that. Like, it's the punches that feel like you hit them hard don't actually hurt them. It's the punches that you don't even think really landed that knock him out. And that's how it felt. I wasn't expecting that. And then watching him watching him fold and his eyes roll behind his head as he's falling back, I was like, fuck yeah, it's done. But I just didn't feel anything in my hand. And then I didn't hear the crowd afterwards until I watched the video of the knockout here in the crowd. Cause in the moment I was just too pumped, too busy celebrating, jumping up and down.
What is that almost out of body experience like, watching the clip afterward and just seeing the crowd's reaction to what you did there in the cage?
Feed your ego, essentially. Like, it feels great. And then the video I watched is actually my buddy Beans recording it. And right after it, you just hear him scream, fuck yeah, fuck yeah. And it's like, I don't know, like, hearing it from my best friend, who's essentially a brother to me, feeling how excited he was for me made that video even more special.
Yeah, I believe Apex Fight Systems went 4-2 that night at Cage Thunder 26. So with that, along with your performance, how great of a night was that for you and the team?
Damn good night, because even the losses weren't real losses. Chris versus Tommy Wiseman was a damn good fight that on a regular card could have been fight of the night. And then the Kobe versus JMR, kind of a boring fight with the dude just trying to hug him the whole time. But even then, like, JMR was, I thought, won. He was landing the harder shots. He kicked the dude so hard. It was literally a picture of the dude flying into the cage because he kicked him so hard. So even the losses, we looked good.
Is it safe to say that it was the greatest night you've had so far in your career?
Yes, hands down. It was the hardest opponent, most highest ranked. I was the underdog by far. If you look at Tapology, it was like 90-10 for him to win. So the fact that everybody was against me, except for my team, and the fact that he was so highly regarded and we both knew going into it, the winner gets a title shot, essentially, it was pretty nice getting that win. And then everyone else's wins just added to it.
Who had the better knockout at Cage Thunder 26, you or your teammate, Jack Shaw?
I'll go with Jack. I love slam knockouts. Like, he essentially killed that kid, man. Like, as soon as you pick him up, suplex him, the dude's just limp laying there. The ref just took a little bit to get to him. But I don't know. I love slam knockouts, so I want to give it to Jack.
So, night of, how does that work? Because you obviously fought after Jack did. Did you watch the fight, or were you in the back preparing for your own? When did you actually see that slam knockout?
I was watching it live. Not cage side, but on the rails, watching it live. And it punched me. As soon as he won, I just went back in the back and started shadow boxing. I was like, fuck, that punched me up. The only fight I didn't watch from our team was Roman, because he was two fights before me. So that's when I was in the back warming up, hitting it.
Yeah, is it easy to find success for yourself on the same night that your teammates are finding success and they're coming back and, like you said, really amping you up, and it makes you want to get in there that much more?
It makes it easier, yes. Like if I watched them all lose one at a time, like it would have been devastating. And then there's pressure, like, okay, I have to win. I have to put on a show. But Jack essentially getting that huge highlight reel knockout loosened me up. It made it easier. And then Roman's completely dominating from start to finish made it easier. It was like there's less pressure. You would think there'd be more pressure because, like, I got to mount up to the essentially their performances. But I didn't think like that. It made it easier. The fact that Apex looked so good that night, I was like, fuck it. If I maybe don't perform my best, I won't be as bothered by it because my team did so great.
You represent Apex Fight System so well. You even have a tattoo of the gym's logo. What's it like training there, and what has Apex done for you in the last 3 to 4 years?
I don't want to say saved my life, because it's cliche, but, like, this is my only reason for being in shape. If I wasn't doing this and Brian wasn't letting me train here and having a great gym being ran, I'd probably be morbidly obese, eating myself into a coma, because before I started this, I was 330. Pushing 350, I looked terrible. I was in terrible shape. I was getting tired walking upstairs, getting off the couch. So I could be dead if it wasn't for this, but I'm not going to say it saved my life. It was just too cliche.
So when you were at your heaviest, did you imagine competing in mixed martial arts and having the career that you have now? Or was that just so far-fetched and out of mind for you at the time?
I had the dreams when I was 18 and in shape, but when I got fat, I thought I was just going to be a couch potato for the rest of my life. And then breakup happened. Something just switched, like it does in most men when a bad breakup goes. It was like, fuck it, I'm going to better myself. That's what I did. And that's what I aim to do.
Something that I love about Apex is that when one of you guys fight, everyone makes the walk together before eventually splitting off. How strong is that bond between Apex fighters and what Brian Clark has built in that gym?
Pretty damn good. If anyone's doing something like Andrew Meissner, he hasn't fought for K-Stunner yet, I believe, but if he throws a party, he invites the entire team. If Roman's having a party, he invites the entire team. So like, we all hang out essentially like we're friends. Even though there's a 10-year age gap between me and most of the guys in here, and I don't understand the words they're saying because I don't speak Gen Z or anything, but we're all pretty close, and it's pretty nice because it would be too awkward if you're going into a gym, you just felt unwanted.
What's it like seeing those young guys like Jack Shaw, Matt Brown, Roman Parobek, and others find so much success?
Almost like being a dad, like a father figure, but I want to live my life through them. I didn't have the opportunity when I was younger. I lived in California, $2,000-$3,000 a month in rent. So I was working 60 hours a week just to pay rent and barely have food. So I had no options to train and do this when I was younger. So watching them do it, being able to live their dreams, like, I try to encourage them, like, take this serious, diet seriously, train hard. Because, dude, MMA is so new. It's only been around for 30 years. I think actually it started when I was born, like the same month, same year, like September 1993. So they can get, they get pro, they get 2-3 good wins. They can get on the Dana White Contender Series. And they can get in the UFC, just like Dylan Butka. He's 22. He's young into his career, and he got into it. So, like, I don't want to say I'm like their dad telling them what to do, but I do try to encourage them to take everything serious because it's a very real possibility. If they're 20 or 25, they could be in the UFC, especially with Ohio being like a hotbed for MMA.
Yeah, that's a great point. Talking with Undead Jeremy Riley on Forged in Ohio. We don't have to spend too much time on this, but I want to talk about your social media post after the win at Cage Thunder 26, where you said you finally felt worthy enough to post your record. I remember talking about having you on the show when you're 1-2 and didn't want to come on because of your record. Why has that been so important to you?
It's because when I lost my first two fights and I broke my leg, I had people from my hometown messaging me saying they're glad I lost, laughing at me breaking my leg, like people making bets with other people from our school betting that me and my buddy Beans would lose. So I didn't want to post anything. I essentially felt ashamed. I was disappointed in myself, and I didn't want to prove them right by showing them that I couldn't make it. But now 3-3, fighting for a title, I can rub it in their face that I'm doing what I want to do, chasing my dreams, made it. I haven't made it because I'm not UFC or pro yet, but I'm doing more with my life than probably what they've been doing with theirs, and they're all out of shape. So I feel damn confident, and that's why I love making posts and taking pictures at the gym, because I do this out of spite. Although I should maybe do it for myself, I run on spite.
Yeah, it's good fuel and a motivator for you, that's for sure. You also said in the post that you feel like a fighter now. Why is that?
Even record, I look good. Like my one win was against, like when I was 1-3 after the Beal fight. Like my one win was against Cordae Barnes, with no disrespect to him. He's unknown. No one knew him. It was a win against essentially someone who I should have beat. So that's not proving I was a fighter. Going out there and beating AJ Mattia, who had years of experience and 7 fights under his belt. Granted, it wasn't a winning record, but it was still someone with a lot more experience than me and 40 pounds heavier, and I knocked him out. But then going up and taking on someone who's 3-1, #2 ranked in Ohio, that was the challenge. That was me challenging and proving to myself I am a fighter, because you can't be 1-6 or 0-6 like some of these Facebook warriors are fighting in the cage, like, and call myself a fighter. Like, I just can't do that. So I needed a winning or even record to be able to call myself a fighter.
And what would Ohio MMA be without those Facebook warriors? Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, shit. There's some promotions that rely on just garage fighters and making their promotion look good and making their home gym fighters look good. So they're needed. I mean, everyone needs a bottom feeder to feed on, but I just can't live with myself. I have too much. I don't want to say I'm too prideful, but I just too much pride for that. I can't just be 0-3, 0-4. On Facebook saying, hey, I'm a fighter, check me out.
So starting your career 0-2, suffering the leg injury as well, and then dropping to 1-3, did you ever waver from thinking that you could improve your record and get it back to 500 like it is now?
Yeah. So after the leg break, definitely wasn't like, maybe in the moment I was like, okay, I should be done. But after the 2 days, I didn't want to give up. I couldn't end like that. Now after the Matt Beal fight, I was pretty devastated. I was like, I thought I won. I broke my nose. I looked beat up. And in that moment, I was just so heartbroken that I told the gym and everyone, I was like, I'm sorry I let you guys down, but I think I'm done. And I essentially ended up taking 4 months off. And then just got the drive, came back in, got a fight 30 days later. Probably wasn't in the best shape. Probably wasn't the greatest idea. But it was, sometimes you just need that motivation. Like, it's hard to come in here and train without having a fight. Like, as bad as that may make me sound or make some people sound, like, you sometimes need a fight for that motivation. So getting back in the gym and then immediately having a fight book just gave me that drive to go out there, get the knockout, and then just carry it on. I've been training every day since then, sometimes 2-a-days. And now it's coming out with a title fight. Hopefully win the title, come home with the title.
Was there something specific after that Matt Beal fight and the time off that triggered you to get back in the gym and continue with this MMA journey?
I think it was just work getting monotonous, like just doing the same thing every day, just work, come home with nothing to look forward to. Got my dogs, hang out with my dogs, but that was it. It was just work, hang out with my pups, watch TV. And I was like, fuck, man, like, I feel like I'm doing nothing. Like, I'm 30. I don't have a long time to do this. So I was like, fuck, I'm going to get back in there. I have 4 years left before I need to start getting MRIs and all these other tests to be a pro. Like, I need to do this for at least 4 more years.
Yeah, and I know mentally, and this isn't necessarily like a fight question, but mentally in all walks of life, it's easier to live happily when you have something to look forward to, whether it's a vacation or even like a meal. And for you as a fighter, though, does having a fight booked give you that something to look forward to? And do you struggle mentally when you don't have a fight booked?
Definitely before, because like when I had a losing record, like winning a fight, having a fight was my motivation. Now that I have possible title fights coming up and I could go pro at any moment, and knowing how easy it, not easy, but how soon you can get into a Dana White Contender Series show if you put on exciting fights, and that's the definition of undead. Like, I put on exciting fights. Like, it's a very real possibility. So now, even if I don't have a fight book, that's my motivation. Get to pro, get 2-3 solid, exciting wins, get on the Contender Series, and put on a show, and I can finally quit my job.
How difficult has your overall journey been from taking your first fight after only 25 days of training to losing over 60 pounds to compete and overcoming all those early hurdles that you face in your career?
Overall, I mean, I don't want to say it's probably one of the more difficult ones, but I feel like everyone here, like I want to say it's like no one has broken their leg and come back from that to fight. Like most people in amateurs, when they break their leg and are 0-2, they're done. Now the weight loss for the Foster fight, I wasn't that hard because I was so fat. I have a lot of fat to lose. So that honestly wasn't that hard. Now getting in there and getting my ass beat in front of everyone kind of sucked. And then going out to the next fight, winning, breaking my leg, that sucked. And so that was probably the hardest part, the breaking my leg, having to go through 8 months of rehab, essentially, then 8 months of getting in shape to fight, and then getting a quick win, then losing to Matt Beal. That section of my career was probably the hardest, like between the leg break and Matt Beal, because at one point I felt like if I beat Devon Blythewood and got that fight, like I would have been on a roll. I could be pro right now. So when that leg broke and it stunted my growth I had going at that moment, it was pretty devastating. So overall, I want to say it was pretty rough, but I also don't want to say it was the hardest because I'm sure people go through worse.
I think your reaction to the Matt Beal fight is pretty interesting because it was one of the most entertaining amateur fights that Ohio has ever seen. And you could say that for MMA in general, right? But you thought you won that fight. You thought you did enough to win that fight, but you weren't at least proud of the body of work that you showed in that fight to make it as entertaining as it was, and you still felt down and down enough to take some time off from MMA, like you said.
Yeah, like, I mean, I was proud to put on a fight of the year, but I felt like I won. So it just broke me. It just broke me for 4 months. I don't know what it is, how to describe it, to be honest, because now I am proud of that fight. I'll show anyone that fight because it's a loss. Oh, well, in my head, it's a win. But also, me and Matt Bill are pretty fucking cool. After every fight I have, he'll message me. So it's almost like a rivalry of like Naruto and Sasuke from the anime Naruto. Like we fought each other, and now I wouldn't say we're best friends or anything, but like we're pretty close now after the fight. So it was pretty nice.
So when someone comes up to you and asks to see one of your fights, do you show them the Matt Beal fight, or do you go to one of your most recent knockout wins?
Well, now I show them the 20-second clip of the knockout with James Dennis. I'll show them that. But if I send someone a video, it's usually the Matt Beal fight. But now it'll probably be the James Dennis fight.
You referenced this earlier, and you showed it in the social media post as well, that 83% of people on Tapology voted for James Dennis to win at Cage Thunder 26. What was your reaction to that at first, and how good does it feel now that you proved so many people wrong?
Honestly, I didn't see that post until afterwards. Someone from Cage Thunder actually came back there and was like, this is the biggest fucking upset. And they showed me the ratings. It was like, I thought it was 90-10, but I guess it was 83-17. But yeah, I was like, I mean, in my head, I didn't think it was an upset because I've watched the tape. I was confident. And that was our response. As soon as they said it was the biggest upset, we're like, what upset? We were expecting this.
So going into it, you had no idea that you were the quote unquote underdog coming in.
I mean, obviously, he has a bigger hometown. I'm not from Ohio at all. I'm not from here. I have no friends here outside of my gym. So the whole crowd was going to be for him. So I was expecting that atmosphere. It was the same as when I fought Foster. As I was walking out to Foster, people were talking shit to me. This time, I think I've earned respect where people don't shit talk me, but they were still cheering for him. You watch the fight, you watch the intro, you hear only my team cheering for me. You hear like 20 people. When they announced James Dennis, the entire crowd erupts. So I knew going into it, he was going to be the hometown favorite, but I didn't know it. He would be like overall favored that much. Like I thought I had done enough to kind of earn some respect, but I guess not. But maybe now they're putting some respect on my name.
Hey, Jeremy Riley against the world. Am I right?
Oh, yeah.
Once again, this is Undead Jeremy Riley with us on Forged in Ohio. Now let's talk about the future, as you already have your next fight booked. You alluded to it already. You're scheduled to take on Charlie Cleveland on May 4th for a title. Was this the sort of quick turnaround that you were looking for?
We were expecting June 1st, actually. We were expecting June 1st against someone that Cage Thunder would offer to me. I made three call-outs. So I was expecting one of those three I called out. But as soon as I made the call-out post, promotion hit me up saying, we got a title fight for you. Because I guess their original title fight fell out. The dude saw my knockout and just hit me up, and we took it.
How excited are you to compete for your first amateur championship?
I'm going to be honest. It's not the championship itself I'm excited for. It's the fucking belt. Their belts look amazing. It's just a giant bowl of horns. Like, I want that on the wall under my poster. So it's not necessarily the title fight I'm excited for. I just want to get that title.
Yeah, I mean, that's a belt with horns on. I mean, that's up right up Jeremy Riley's aisle, man, right?
Yep. I mean, I got like a little archangel pentagram on my chest. So a little devil belt would be fitting.
There you go, man. So I know you have a win over a guy out of Demolition Fight Team already, but have you been impressed by Charlie Cleveland and what he brings to the cage?
I've watched one of his fights pretty thoroughly. Got a game plan down already. Technique goes to me by far, I believe, but he is super fast, super strong, super explosive. Like, the dude pops in, throws a 1-2, pops out before his opponent can even react. So this is probably the one fight I'll be going into where I don't have the speed advantage. I probably don't have any physical advantages. He's probably stronger than me. Even though I'm bigger by 40 pounds, the dude looks like a fucking monster. So he's probably going to be stronger, faster, better cardio. But I got the heart, and I do have better skill, better technique. I've been at this longer than he has, but he's a super freak. So anything can happen, but I am expecting a win.
How do you expect to react in the cage when you might not have the speed advantage for the first time in your career?
I don't know. Because even here with the smaller guys, like, I can match their speed pretty well. So I've never really been outstruck as far as speed. I've never been outsped before. So I don't know how I'll react. I mean, I have a game plan. I've seen his fights. He telegraphs a lot, so I'm going to rely on my eyes seeing the telegraphing to beat his speed, which is where precision beats speed.
He's 2-0 with both fights not even reaching the third minute in the first round. Is this another fight where you don't expect it to last very long?
Honestly, I'm expecting probably second round. Like, I think the first round, I'll give it to him. It's probably going to go to him because he's going to be so fast, so strong. But I'm not going to go out in the first round. That's just not who I am. But the second round, I think he's going to start crumbling, falling apart, because he relies on so much quick movement, jumping in and out. He's so physically gifted and relies on it so much. I think that's when he's going to tire, and that's when I'll get the finish, the second round.
Yeah, I like hearing this technique talk from you. I feel like some other Ohio amateur heavyweights might just be like, yeah, man, I have knockout power. That's all I'm relying on. Screw the technique, the speed, all that kind of stuff. And you mentioned how he might win the first round, but then you're going to come out there in the second round and maybe get a finish. In that first round, are you a fighter that likes to digest what they're doing and then try and give them something else and make your own adjustments heading into round two or even three?
I think I'm not that far advanced yet to really think that much in the fight. Because honestly, when I'm in my fights, I want to describe it as brain dead. I'm just relying on my instincts and my game plan I set before the fight. Because in the moment, I'm not really thinking a whole lot. So I can't really say if I'm going to go out there and come up with a game plan, a different game plan in the middle of the fight. I just know I have a game plan and I'm going to execute it. If he wants to pick me up and try to slam me a hell of times, I'll welcome it, because that's just him wasting energy throwing around 270 pounds.
Yeah, that's true. With him being undefeated and having won his last fight for LFA, do you think he'll be considered the underdog once again?
I don't think so. I think I'll be going in there favored, because everybody likes the bigger guy better, and I'm outweighing him by 40 pounds. So I know to me that doesn't mean anything. My last two opponents outweighed me by 40 pounds. So to a casual, to an average person, they're going to see the size difference and probably just think, oh, I'm going to smother him and win. So I think I'll actually be favored going into this. But I'm not looking at it like that, because I know with how fast and strong he is, all he has to do is land one good punch. Because even though I have a chin, I don't see it coming, it's going to put me out.
I've heard you talk about wanting to fight the best. How important is it to you to test yourself, especially as you continue to grow as an amateur fighter and look for that pro debut down the line?
Amateurs, I want the hard fight. That's why I want Adrian Vaksani. I want RJ Harris. I wanted James Dennis. I want the hard fight as an amateur where the fights don't matter. You know, like once you go pro, no one talks about your amateur career. No one even brings it up. So I want to take the hardest fights I can whilst I still want some titles. But if I don't get the title fights or if the title fights aren't the best people, I'll skip the title fight. Like if my fight was against some random dude that was like 2-5, but I had an option to fight RJ Harris that wasn't a title fight, I would take RJ Harris over the title fight because I want to test myself. I'm going pro soon. The pro fights aren't going to be easy. So I essentially want to go through hell as an amateur so pro can be easy.
The call out of RJ Harris, who is fighting at Cage Thunder 27 for the promotion's heavyweight championship, is a fight between you and RJ Harris inevitable?
Yeah, because if we don't meet as amateurs, I'll just fight him at pro. So I think at some point, if we don't fight August 18th, if he doesn't win June 1st, and I win May 4th, and our paths just don't cross because I'm winning and he happened to lose, I'll just fight him as a pro. If we both keep winning and we fight August 18th, it'll be a banger. So yeah, either we fight as pros or we fight as amateurs. So I think it's inevitable. So I do want to fight him just because of how much hype he has. He has such a huge fan base. And he's seen as the big bad boogeyman. I've seen his fights. He hits hard. But I don't think he has a whole lot of technique. I think I'd be faster and better technique. And I think I can pop in and land on him.
So fighters talk about fighting people that excite them, that get them out of bed in the morning. Is it safe to say that a guy like RJ Harris fits that criteria for you?
Yes. RJ Harris and Adrian Vaksani. Because Adrian is also another monster. I think he's 4-0 or 5-0. And he's killed everybody he's fought. It hasn't even been close. Just complete domination from start to finish. I think they're all finishes, too. And he's even had a Muay Thai fight, I believe, and he looked pretty good in that, too. So, arguably, Adrian's a harder fight, and he might even beat RJ Harris June 1st. But RJ has something you can't teach, which is size and power. And he's not scared. He'll go in there. He'll stand. He'll throw an uppercut if Adrian goes for a takedown. And if he lands clean, he can knock him out.
If you were able to matchmake yourself for the rest of 2024, what would that look like?
Oh, man. Ideally, I would love to fight Maurice Yarborough, which is a fighter out of Grove City, BJJ. I would like to fight him. He's 5-3. He looks like a fucking beast, so I want to fight him. RJ Harris and Adrian Vaksami. At one point, I wanted to fight Terry Snyder and some of the other heavyweights, but they decided to go down to 205, which... not like it's dogging them or anything. They have the determination to lose that weight. I don't have the determination to lose 70 pounds. So I'm going to stay at heavyweights. But at heavyweight right now, Maurice Yarborough, RJ Harris, Adrian Vaksani.
Do you think it's a possibility that you get all those three fights this year in 2024?
I don't think so. Because if I win May 4th and I win August, I plan to go pro. So May 4th is Charlie. August 18th is Adrian or RJ. So the other two, I'll have to meet them at pros.
So I was already planning on asking you about matchmaking yourself in the future. And I was actually at Apex earlier this week, and your coach, Brian Clark, said that you matchmake too much. What do you make of that?
I mean, yeah, they always tell me I get ahead of myself. Now you matchmake for everyone, not just me. Like I'll matchmake for everyone in the gym. Like whenever someone says they want to fight, I immediately go to Tapology and look for who I want them to fight. And I would love to be a matchmaker in the sense of matching the fights and that's it. I don't want to go through the hassle of meshing fighters, dealing with their excuses and all the other BS. But matchmaking a fight, I would love to do. I would love to matchmake an entire case on the card.
Maybe that's a possibility down the line, but could you see yourself as that role one day, or at least maybe an assistant to the matchmaker? That way, all that technical stuff you don't have to deal with.
I mean, right now at 30, I can't imagine doing that role because I want to be active. But hell, maybe at 40 when I'm done fighting, yeah, I'll do the paperwork. I'll deal with all the BS by then. I would love to matchmake. It probably wouldn't be a career because I don't think you get paid much of anything. So I'd have my main career going. I would definitely do it as a side gig. I just love putting on bangers. I would love to watch all the amateur fights and just match the best against the best and just have every card be a banger, which, I mean, Scott does a damn good job anyways. Like Cage Thunder I love watching cage fighter fights more than UFC fights, to be honest, because, I mean, the pros in the UFC are fucking phenomenal, but here, like, there's more, like, sentimental value to it. I know a lot of the guys, or if I don't know them, I've heard of them, I've seen of them, I know of them. So it's a hell of a lot more interesting. There's other cards, like, other promotions nearby, and they almost put on one-sided fights. Like, I've been to shows where there's, like, 12 first-round finishes in the first 12 seconds, because you got trained fighters against bums, and it's just not entertaining. Cage Thunder will occasionally have a bum against a fighter, but usually they try to put two guys at a lower level together and then two higher levels. Like, they do a pretty good job matchmaking. So I gotta say, I love Scott's matchmaking.
I love that when you compete, you put on bangers, and you aspire one day to matchmake to put on some more bangers. I love that, and it really shows the fighter that you are. I'll leave you with this. What can fans expect to see out of you on May 4th against Charlie Cleveland, fighting for your first amateur heavyweight championship?
Probably expect me looking at my leanest, hopefully, and expect a second round, probably TKO, and me coming home with a belt. I mean, I don't want to say too much of what to expect in the fights. I don't want to give out too much of a game plan or anything, but just expect me to win.
Hey, you called your shot, and that's still much appreciated. Before we wrap up, is there anything you want to shout out here at the back end of the podcast? The floor is yours.
Yeah, I want to shout out all the fighters that watch the fights and don't step in the cage, because all they do is see red. I want to thank them for not hurting us.
Okay, fair enough. Thanks again, Jeremy, for joining me on the show. I know you're a busy man, but it was great to finally have you on the podcast. I know you have California roots, but I got to get you to do the OHIO chant with me before I get you out of here. So, OHIO. Thanks, Jeremy. It's been a wild ride following your career. I can't wait to see what you do next on May 4th. And we'll connect again down the line here soon, man.
All right, thank you. Have a good night.
That was Undead Jeremy Riley, the 3-3 amateur mixed martial artist. The recent success of Jeremy Riley has been incredible to watch. He's on a 2-fight win streak for the first time in his career. He's won 3 of his last 4, and his last loss was to Matt Beal in one of the craziest amateur fights you'll ever see. Now there's a sense of urgency behind him as he'll fight for his first amateur title on May 4th against Charlie Cleveland. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to click the download button wherever you're listening. And if you're on YouTube, make sure to like the video and subscribe to the channel if you aren't already. And of course, check us out on Instagram and Facebook at Forged in Ohio as well. Thank you all for watching or tuning in. I've been your host, Jake Murren, and this was Forged in Ohio.